They would begin here on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, two lines down. Yibailuhu, aid me pi aid. If you have information that comes from an individual that told it to someone else, in other words, hearsay, ma'u le'edut b'chor, is that valid when it comes to testifying with regards to a b'chor, that a kohen did not intentionally put the mum in here? We need testimony. We need evidence of the fact that the kohen didn't do it himself because they're not trustworthy. That edut that you require, what type of trappings does it have? Now the question is somewhat strange because aid me pi aid is a psul when we're dealing with issues of edut, when you're dealing with issues of testimony. Over here, the information that we're seeking is not real testimony. We're seeking nemanut, which is believability. And we have a principle in general, eid echad neman b'yisurim, that individuals or single individuals believe with regards to yisurim, and we don't have any of the trappings or the requirements of normal eidut. And so therefore, why wouldn't aid me pi aid be okay in this situation? So what we saw yesterday was that this eidut of bechor sits somewhere in between the din of eidut, which is regular testimony, and nemanut of yisurim. As we saw in the shita of Rabbi Yeshua ben Kapusai yesterday, that he required two eidim to come and testify to make it like real eidut. And we saw that Rashi, the Rambam, believed that that's true, whether it's Yisrael, whether it's Kohanim, that Eid Echad is not Ne'eman B'Yisurim over here because there's a Chezkad Yisur with regards to the Bechor. So the Eidut of Bechor sits somewhere along that spectrum of Eidut and Ne'emanut. If it was Ne'emanut, it's clear that Eid Mipay would be fine. If it's an issue of Eidut, it's clear that it'd be problematic. Bechor that sits somewhere in the middle, that's the nature of the question here. Does it work over here, or which side is it more leaning towards? Is it leaning more towards Eidut or more towards the side of Ne'emanut? The Gemara says, Rav Asi Asar, Rav Ashi Sharit, that's the girsa that we have. You can see there's an alternate girsa of Rav Ami Asar and Rav Asi Sharit. Amalei Rav Asi, the Rav Ashi, and obviously you'd have to adjust that based on the girsa that you have. Tahatana de Beit Menashe, we have a brayta from the Beit Midrash of Menashe, Ein Eid Mi Beit Kasher, Ela Le'edut Haisha, or Le'edut Isha Bilvat. That the only time Eid Mi Beit works is by Eidut Isha. Eidut Isha is a reference to the issues of Aguna. And the assumption of the statement of the Braita is that only by Aguna do we permit Eid Mi Beit. It's a kula that we use because of the issues of Aguna. The Chachamim gave a special dispensation. So from this Braita, it sounds like that's unique location where we allow for such a Eidut to take place. And so even though this isn't your best type of Eidut, Eid Mi Pi Aid, nevertheless, because of the issues of Aguna, we're matir. But that's the only place we're going to give that dispensation, not necessarily a broad dispensation to use Eid Mi Pi Aid. And that would mean that over here it would be invalid. When it says, Tnei, Ela Le'edut Sha'ishak Shera La Bilvad. Eidut Isha does not mean for Eidut relating to a woman, meaning for an Aguna, rather Eidut Isha. When a woman testifies, when is an aid mi pi aid kasher? When a woman can also testify in that situation. So now, in the case of Aguna, it happens to be that a woman also can testify there. That's one of the kulot, that we accept a woman's testimony with regards to an Aguna. So we also accept aid mi pi aid. In our instance as well, where Isha is fine to testify with regards to the Bechor, we know that from Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel yesterday, who said that the family is believed. Af beno, af bito. Even his son, even his daughter. That means that a daughter's testimony would have been sufficient in this situation. And Eidut Isha would have been fine. Those that argue on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel don't argue fundamentally about the question of whether a bat can give testimony. They just say family members are not believed because they're no geva davar. So the psul there, or their problem with his position, is not because it was a woman testifying, it's because there's a lack of nemanut for someone who's in the family. And also we saw afterwards, the Gemara discussed his wife, who is precluded because of ishto kegufo. They didn't preclude his wife because any duti shah is not accepted, but rather because she is, again, nogeva davar, she is equivalent to being him, because the ishto kegufo. So we see that a duti shah works over here. So if Eidut Isha works over here by Bechor, so too, Eid Mi Pi Aid should also work in this instance. Rav Yemar, Achshar Eid Mi Pi Aid by Bechor. So Rav Yemar Paskin like the views here that it is Mutar, and you can use Eid Mi Pi Aid to declare that the Bechor is a Bechor Malmum and that the Kohen did not put this in intentionally, but rather it happened by itself. Kari Alei Mereimar, Mereimar said about Rav Yemar, Yemar Shari Bukra. Yemar, the one who's Matir Bechorot, and that wasn't a compliment, as Rashi says, it was Lashon Ganai, meaning that he was denigrating him with this title of, you're the Matir Bechorot, meaning that you just give away everything, you let everything go. Be'ilchoto, Gemara says, Allah is, Eid mi pe'eid, kasher le'idut bechor. Regards to an eidut bechor, eid mi pe'eid is okay, just like an isha is fine in this case. And again, that's because here by eidut bechor, it's leaning more heavily towards the side of nemanut than it is to the side of eidut. There are certain instances where we're going to require a higher standard where we worry about lying, whether it's a ru'eh kohen, whether it's kohenim in general, according to Rabbi Meir. There where they have lack nemanut, then we're going to upgrade and demand certain levels of eidut that are more formal in nature. But otherwise, nemanut is enough over here, and that would include even a woman and would include even an eid mipi eid. Gemara then continues, Amar Rabbi Yila, lo yu muchzakim bo shehu bechor. We had no idea this animal was a bechor. Ba'achad v'amar, and some individual comes along, a kohen, and says, shehu bechor, the animal that's here with me is a bechor, umumo imo. But it has this mum in it, ne'eman, he is believed. Maika mashmalan, what is that teaching you? Sha'pesha asar hu'apesha hitir. Basically, the dispensation that allows us to believe the Kohen in this instance is a concept called ha'pesha asar, the mouth that made it asur, is a pesha hitir, is also the mouth that made it mutar. Absent this individual, we'd have no idea this animal was a bechor. Nobody has that information. Given that there's no exogenous information telling us this is a bechor, and the sole reason we know it's a bechor is because this individual told us that it is a bechor, then that person also has the right to limit that which he is saying. He's telling us it's a bechor, but he's also telling us it's a bechor b'amum. Had he wanted to, he could have told us none of that information, and he'd be in the same position. Right now he's telling us that it's a bechor b'amum that is now mutar for me to eat. Had he wanted to, he could have just said nothing and he could have eaten it like chulin. So the fact that he told us it was a bechor, he has no upside in telling us that. It's information that we wouldn't have known otherwise. And then when he adds on top of that, it has a mum in it, we're going to believe him because it's a pesha asar, a pesha etir. Gemara says, why do I need you to tell me that? Tanina, it's an explicit mishnah. Aisha shamra, eshid ishayiti, a woman who stands up and says, I was once married, ugrushani, but now I'm divorced. Ne'menet, she is believed. Shapesh asar hu apesh etir. Absent her declaration, we had no idea that she had been previously married. She's walking around this town with people assuming that she is a single woman. And we have no other information to indicate otherwise. She suddenly informs us that she was once married. But she also tells us that she was also divorced. So for the same reason we believe her that she was married, we should also believe her that she was divorced. So Ma'od Tema. So Gemara says the Mishnah is not sufficient because Hotam Ho Di Bai Lo Amra. Over there, by the case of the woman, she could have taken the option not to say anything because she would have been in the same position either way. Had she not disclosed any information, we would have thought she was single and then she could have gotten married as a single and she would have done nothing wrong because she knows that she was married and divorced, but that still makes her mutar to get married. So if she gets married under the assumption that when she was single, leaving aside the issues of bitulah, kohanim, any of those issues that would might be gezel or isur, but assuming that there's no isur and there's no gezel, she's not misrepresenting anything, but she just says that she's a single woman and she gets married based on that assumption, she doesn't have to worry. She's done nothing wrong because even if she was married and divorced, she's still permitted to get married at this point in time. So for there's no compelling reason that she needs to disclose the information. Avahocha, dolo sagia, dolo amra. Here, where he can't get away without saying something, the kodeshim bachut lo achil. Because he won't eat kodeshim bachut. This is an important factor that's going to show up a number of times in the daf today, which is that kohanim, even though they're chashudim in terms of putting mumim into bechorot in order to eat the bechorot and not have to be metapel to deal with them over years so that they can deal with it right away, eat it, and take out the cost and get the benefit of the bechor, that they are chashud on. What they are not chashud on is eating kodeshim b'chutz. They will not eat a bechor if it doesn't have a mum in it. There's no chashash that the kohen will say, ah, why do I have to wait for a mum? I'm just going to eat it the way it is. It's mine. That we don't worry about. Both because of the fact that there is a chiyuv karet associated with eating kodeshim b'chutz. Shechita kodeshim b'chutz is a chiyuv karet, so it's a serious violation. And number two is, it's an area where the kohenim are makpid. They don't eat kodeshim b'chutz. When there's a dispensation, they take advantage of the dispensation. But they're not just going to do something b'isur. So for that reason, the kohen is not chashud to eat kodeshim b'chutz. For that reason, he needs to disclose to us the information that this is a b'chor. Now the truth is, if the b'chor had a mum in it that was so obvious that it had a mum in it, was missing a leg, whatever other mum that is obvious, then also it wouldn't be an issue. Over here you have a more subtle mum in the animal. And now he wants to be able to eat this animal and have it be declared that it's not kodeshim b'chutz. Everybody else thinks it's chulin. So as far as other people are concerned, if he goes and eats it, nobody's going to suspect that he's doing anything wrong. But he himself knows that it's a b'chor. And he knows that it needs to go to his back. Without a mum, he's not allowed to eat it. So he needs to disclose this information because he needs the chacham to paskin on this b'chor to be matter it for him to eat it. So that's what the Gemara says. You would have thought that this case is different because since he won't eat kodeshim b'chutz and he needs the approval, the certification of the chacham, ema lo apesh asarhu. Maybe it's not a case of pesha asar. Pesha asar is only where all the information is voluntary, meaning that they tell us all the information, they weren't compelled to tell us the information. Because then we can say the pesha asar was a pesha itir, because the person voluntarily told us this information, information they didn't have to say, information they didn't need to disclose, or information we don't know from any other source. Because of that, we completely believe them. On the other hand, if there's any reason to compel them to say or disclose the information, whether that's because we have some information, whether it's because they need the information to be disclosed, or unlike in this case, where they need the chacham's approval, we don't say that it's a pesha asar. Kamash malan, that we don't say that. The reason we don't say that is the e, mishum hochi, ha-veshodeh ve-muma denikar vachele. There's an easy solution to that problem. The Kohen, if he really wanted to make sure that it wasn't kodeshim b'chutz, he can make a mum in it that he doesn't need a chacham to paskin on, where he himself knows that that's a sufficient mum to make it that it's not kodeshim b'chutz. So since he has that option, he can get out of the problem of kodeshim b'chutz. So if he wanted to get rid of that problem, he could do it himself. The fact now that he's coming to the chacham and telling him it's a b'chor and he wants the psak of the chacham already is an indication that this person is telling the truth, because he could have, if he wanted to lie, if he wanted to get away with this, if he wasn't interested in getting the right halacha here, he simply could have put a nice big mum in it and then gone and eaten it. It's not kodeshim b'chutz anymore. There's no issue of karei. So if he was going to cheat and put the mum in and he's doing this to fake us out, then he had a much better way to do it. Just make a solid mum and there'd be nothing to discuss. On the other hand, if he is now coming with a subtle mum in it and asking the chacham about it, that's already indicative of the fact that this individual is looking for real answers and is speaking the truth when he told us it's a b'chor, and it's a b'chor where he didn't put the mum into the b'chor. So we do say pesha asu, pesha hitir over here. Matkiv l'amar baravashi. Maishna, why is this any different? Me'au gavra, the ogir le'chamra le'chabre. It's an individual who rented out his donkey to his friend. V'amar le, and it's a stipulated condition of the rental, he says, lo tezel ba'orcha de'nahar pakud. Don't go down the road that you have to cross, traverse Nahar Pakud, the Ikamayo, because there's water over there, and that's going to be difficult for the animal to traverse. It's slippery, it's dangerous. Don't go down that road. Zil Orcha de Narsh, the Lekamayo. Take the road that crosses over the Narsh River, where you won't bump into water, whether there are bridges over there, whether the water flow is lower, whatever the reason, he stipulates that as part of the contractual obligations, which is, I'm renting you the donkey. Here's the information about where to take this donkey or where you're allowed to drive the donkey. Of course, the renter didn't listen, and he took the donkey down the path or the street, the road that crosses over Nahar Pakud, umit chamra, and the donkey died. Ata v'amale, the renter comes back and says to the owner of the chamor, ba'orcha de Nahar Pakud azle, I went down the road of Nahar Pakud. He didn't lie. He told the truth. But there was no water there. So I didn't listen to you, and I went down the road of Narbakut, but on the other hand, there was no water there. You had said there was water there. There was no water there. So I should be patur from the death of the chamor because it was a negligence. I went that way, but I ended up there without water. So again, that should be a classic case of a pesha asar, a pesha hitir. Because if he wanted to lie to us, he could have just said, I went down the other road. And nobody would have known anything different, and he wouldn't be chayav. It's made the machmat melacha. It died doing its work, and he's not responsible for it. But instead, he told us the truth. And he told us, I didn't listen to you, and I went down the path of Darfakud, but there was no water there. So I should believe him, because he'd have to tell me he went down the road of Darfakud, and he told me anyway. So we should also believe him. There was no water over there. There was no issue. Vama Rava, and Tosafot changes the gears to hear Amar Rabba. One reason is that over here you have Rava speaking and then Abaye afterwards. And generally when we have a machloket Abaye and Rava, Abaye's position comes first. You could argue over here it was a case law and then Abaye is responding to it. Maybe it's different. And therefore it would make more sense if it was Rava, who's the Rebbe of Abaye, where we do bring the words of Rava before Abaye. That's number one. Number two is the Baal Tosafot point out that Rava in the Gemara in Baba Batra agrees with Abaye's position over here, and therefore it doesn't make sense that he'd be arguing Abaye over here. It makes more sense that it's Rabba who has this difference of opinion. Rabba says, Malu l'shaker, why does he have to lie over here? Ibai Amar b'uchon anash azle. He could have said, I went down the road of Narsh, or in essence, Pesha Asar, Pesha Hitir, similar concept to Malu l'shaker. He had no reason to lie over here. If he wanted to lie, he has a much better lie to say, which is, I went down the other road, and I did what you told me to do, and it died. The fact that he told us the truth, and said, I went down the illegal road, but there was no water, we should believe him. V'amar Abaye, and Abaye responds to that, Malu Shakar b'makom Eidim lo amrinan. Malu Shakar doesn't work where there is a dut that gives us that information. It's similar to what we discussed before about Pesha Asar, Pesha Itir. Pesha Asar, Pesha Itir only works where all the information is completely voluntary. If we have this information from any other party or any other source, then it's no longer Pesha Asar, Pesha Itir. If we have a deem that the animal was a Bechor, we don't need your testimony anymore to tell us that it's a Bechor. Therefore, you can't claim Pesha Asar, Pesha Itir, because it would be an Asur without your testimony. So similarly over here, if we have a deem that he went down the road of Narpakud, or we have a deem that there was water by Narpakud, then we can't say Malo Lishakir, because the Edim will come along and say, whatever you said is incorrect, and therefore you can't now say he denied it, because when the individual gives you the information, we're assuming that he's doing that voluntarily. If Edim are forcing him to say something, then we can't then say he's saying it because he wants to tell the truth. He's saying it because Edim are compelling him to do that. Or, now, Mali Shakabay Makom Edim is also, if we have testimony that would contradict that statement that he's making now. So if we have the case here where he says, I went down the path of Narpakud and there's no water, and we have a dupe that there is water there, or there was water there, then we don't now say he's definitely believed. He could have lied and said, I went down the path of Narsh. Instead, I went down Narpakud, and there was no water there. He should be believed. He could have lied better. But his lie, now the new lie that he's making, is contradicted by Edim. Edim tells us there was water there. So then you can't say, oh, he's believed because he could have lied better, so now we should believe him here. How can you believe him? There's Edut, there's testimony that is contrary to what he is saying. So Edim can undermine the Mali L'Shakir or the Peshas Mesedir in one of two ways. They can undermine it because the Edim compel you to disclose the information, or they disclose the information, therefore you're not the one bringing us the information, or the Edim could be problematic in that they are negating or contradicting what we would believe based on the concept of Pesha Asar, Pesha Yetir, or Mali L'Shakir. Over here, we're going to believe that this individual did go down Narpakud and there was no water, because he could have lied about Narsh, that he went down the path of Narsh. And we have Edim that say there was water there the whole time. So those Edim contradict us believing him in this case. So we will not say Mali L'Shakir B'Makom Edim. That's what Abaye says. So now, why don't we say the same thing here by the Bechor? by Bechor, Kohanim are chasudim to put mumim into a Bechor. So now we're going to say, oh, we should believe him because he said it's a Bechor, which he didn't need to tell us. And now he says, I didn't put the mum in it. So we should believe him. Pesh asar, pesh yitir. The truth is that there's a dude that is negating his testimony over here. The edim are the fact that Kohanim are chasudim to put mumim there. That's evidence to the contrary. Similar to the case of Nar Pakud. But the case of Nar Pakud, we have no edim that there was no water there. But Rashi says, Anan Sade. Anan Sade is it's common knowledge. It is obvious information as if there are edim. The Choshata Ikamaya. There's never no water by the path of Nar Pakud. Nar Pakud always has water there. We don't need edim to come and tell us that. It's a fact. It's a given. So now he's trying to contradict what is a fact by having us believe him in this situation, because if he wanted to lie, he would have lied better, so we should believe him. But you're asking us to believe him something that contradicts evidence. Evidence is that there's always water in our pakud. Now you want us to believe there was no water there? Similarly by Bechor. You want us to believe that the Kohen didn't put a mumim in here? Kohenim put mumim into animals. So how can you believe him? There's an Anan Sadeh. We know that there's water in our pakud. We know that Kohenim put mumim into animals. So the truth that you're trying to create here contradicts common knowledge. Marseh Zachiashto. How can you compare the cases? Hadam Vada Ikamaya. By Nar Pakud, there is always water there. It's not a question. Hotam Vada Ishadi Be Mumo. Who says that the Kohen definitely put a mum there? Chashoshahu. It's a suspicion. Ubamakom Chashosha Amrina Malo Deshaker. It's a big difference between the case of Nar Pakud where we say Anan Sade. It is so obvious that the water always flows in our pakud that we don't even need a deem to tell us that because it's such a fact. And therefore, when you do the malach shakir, you're trying to contradict that fact. Over here by the Kohanim, where the Kohen puts a mum in a bechor, that's something we suspect. We don't know for sure he put the mum in there. We just have suspicions that they do this or they're not believed with regard to this. But we have other evidence that says that he probably is telling the truth here. Then we will not have that suspicion in this case. If we knew for sure he put a mum there, you're right. That would be a Malo Lushakar of Malkom Edim. But over here, we don't know he did it for sure. We just have a high suspicion of the fact that he did do such a thing. But now when he comes and Pesha Asa, Pesha Itir, he tells us it's a Bechor, which he didn't need to tell us, and I didn't put the mum there, we're going to believe him because we don't know he did it. We just had suspicions. This will override those suspicions and tell us that he's telling the truth in this case. And that's similar to what we said at the top of the daf here, that even by Rabbi Meir's principle that a chashud the devar achad is chashud the kol haTorah kula, we don't say that with regards to the bechor. It's a chashash, it's not something that we know for certain that he's chashud of a devar. And so for that reason, you can't extrapolate Rabbi Meir's din to say that this person is chashud al kol haTorah kula, because there's a chashash that he's going to put a moment at bechor. Yotiv Rabbi Ina, v'kamer l'hai shmatata. He said of over all this memra that we just said here, hello Gabra, without attribution. Amrle Rabba Zute, so the younger Rabba says to Ravina, Anan Mishmeid Rabbi Ilah Matninan Law. We have this information in the name of Rabbi Ilah. That's how we started this part of the Gemara. Amr Rabbi Ilah. Lo yimuksnakim bo shu bechor, ubachad v'amar shu bechor mumo imo ne'aman. So he just says, no, that is not just a stam memra. There's attribution. Rabbi Ilah is the author of that position. And you should add that to your memra. Rabbi Tzadok, Havalei Bukhra. Rabbi Tzadok, who is a Kohen, had for himself a Bukhor. Ramalei Sarei Besalei. He put barley into a basket for him, but it wasn't any basket. It was Besalei, Nasrei or Natsrei, Kailei Aruba, Aroba Kalupa. So it was a wicker basket that was made up of peeled willow twigs. So there is a little bit of sharpness to the basket because of the materials that were used. It's not unusual. It's not anything special, but they're just giving us information. What ends up happening is that he's feeding his bechor with this utensil. So that as he's eating from the basket, his lip gets caught on the edge of the basket or one of the loose twigs there, and it tears the lip. So now there's a mum in the animal's lip. Now, it's clear that Rav Tzadok didn't do it intentionally. It happened accidentally. It happened by itself. Atta l'kamei to Rabbi Yeshua. So he comes to Rabbi Yeshua. Amar le, klom chilaknu ben chaver la'am aretz. Rabbi Tzadok presents the question in the following manner. Do we differentiate between a Talmud Chacham and an Am Aretz? When we say that a stam kohen is kashud, I'm putting a mum there, is that true of all kohenim? Or is that only true of kohenei am haaretz, who are not trustworthy, who don't know the dinim? But a kohen talmud chacham, who has nemanut in many areas, and is a person of stature, learned, knows that you can't put a mum in there, do we believe him? Or in essence, what Rabbi Tzadok is saying about himself is, do I need evidence that I didn't do it, or am I trustworthy here because I am a talmud chacham? Amalo Rabbi Yeshua, hey, yep, we do make such a distinction, and therefore you can use this mum to check the animal, and we'll take it to an expert, get him to opine on it, and if it is a mum, then you can check the animal based on this mum. We don't suspect that you did it, or that it didn't happen by itself. Ata lekamei de Rabban Gamliel, he went and approached Rabbi Gamliel to ask him what the halacha was, Rabbi Tzadok. Amalei, chilaknu ben chaver la'amaretz, klum, chilaknu ben chaver la'amaretz, same question, do we distinguish between them? Amar Le Rabban Gamliel, no. He says, no, there is no distinction. Kohen is a Kohen, and if you're a Kohen, you're a Kashud, I'm putting a mum into a Bechor, and now you need evidence, you need testimony to the fact that you didn't do it.
It's just interesting to note that this is Rabban Gamliel's position here, whereas in the Gemara in Brachot, he makes a distinction between people who are Tochol Kibaro, who he led into the Beit Midrash, and other people that he did not let into the Beit Midrash. So Rabban Gamliel is of the opinion that we differentiate between people. Yeah, within this halacha, he's not willing to differentiate, which may be more akin to what he does in Gemara in the Moed Katan, where he's buried in plain tachrichim in order to level the playing field that all people should be buried the same way and there should be no differentiation in death and nobody should be embarrassed. So it's interesting that Rabbi Gamliel's approach to the Am as a whole was to create a level playing field. On the other hand, when it came to the Beit Midrash and taking on the mantle of Torah and being a Talmud Chacham, over there he was a Kanai, that only people who was Tochol Kibaro could join that exclusive club. Just interesting to note that distinction within Rabban Gamliel's Hashkafa.
Amar Lei, V'Rav Yeshua Amar Li Hein, says, wait a minute, Rabbi Yeshua told me that we do make such a distinction and I'm okay. Now it's interesting here because the Baal Tosafot in other places discuss the fact that one is not allowed to shop a psak, which is that you can't go around and ask multiple Rabbanim for a psak. There is a dispensation where if you disclose up front to the chacham that you're going to ask, that you got information from someone else, and this is what they said. So if you gave them the information in full disclosure, then you can ask them. Over here, Rabbi Tzadok is giving disclosure, but after the fact. He doesn't tell Rabbi Gamliel, oh, Rabbi Yeshua told me this, what do you think? He's saying, what do you think? And then he's saying, after he's differing in his opinion, he says, oh, Rabbi Yeshua said the opposite. So it's interesting just in terms of that dynamic. It could have been that he was going to Rabban Gamliel because he's the Nasi and he's the great Rav of the time, and therefore he wants to get his opinion as well, and he asked Rabbi Yeshua first because you asked the Katan and then you asked the Gadol, but it's still interesting that he did such a thing, and he disclosed the information to Rabban Gamliel. So Amar lo him tain, achyalu balei trisim lebeit midrash. Rabban Gamliel instructs Rabbi Tzadok to wait until the balei trisim literally means the holders of the shields enter into the Beit Midrash. Rashi says, Balei Trisim are Talmidei Chachamim. When they enter into the Beit Midrash, because they're Asuk, as the Gemara in Kedushim says, B'milchamta shel Torah, in the battle of Torah. So Balei Trisim is a mashal for Talmidei Chachamim, who are in the battle of Torah, so they're coming in with their shields. Wait for all the people to gather in the Beit Midrash, the Talmidei Chachamim. Others suggest that Balei Trisim are the guards, or the sheriffs, that belong to the Nasi. Reish Galuta in Bavel, sometimes in Eretz Yisrael, the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael were given a certain amount of autonomy with regards to dictates and adjudication because they were running under the official government system and they were given authority to act under that system. So Rabbi Gamliel, who has technically might have authority to act over here, so he has sheriffs or troops that are provided to him by the government. It says what it means, wait till the Balei Trisim come, wait till the sheriffs come, wait till all those people, the enforcers come here, and we'll have, bring everybody in, and we'll have a diyun over here. So it could be that that's what the reference to Balei Trisim is. Came in Shenichnas of the Beit Midrash, once they entered the Beit Midrash, Amar HaShuel, the Shuel stood up, V'sha'al, and he asked the following question. Tosfot over here brings from the Yushalmi that the questioner has to stand up, because the Pasuk, Darish Mikhtiv Amdu Shnei Anashim, Bevav, Beamdu, that Vav comes to tell you that Shuel Halachot Bagadot Tzarech La'amod. It's like witnesses, or Balei Din have to stand in front of the judges. So too, a person who's presenting a question to the Beit Midrash or to the judges needs to stand up. That's why the Shoel had to stand up over here. Who the Shoel is, the Rabbeinu Gershom says that the Shoel was Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok asked the question. He now is asking the question from the Beit Midrash. It is very possible that it is not Rabbi Tzadok. Rather, Shaul HaShoel was a setup. Rabbi Gamliel had someone present the question to the Beit Midrash in order to discuss the matter in the Beit Midrash. He wanted to bring up the topic. It's not necessarily Rabbi Tzadok. It's the fact that now this is the topic of today, and it's almost like a setup question to get to that topic. Shaul, the question was, Kum chilaktum ben chaver la'amaretz, the question Rabbi Tzadok had presented. Amalei Rabbi Yeshua Lav. Yeshua says we don't distinguish. That's against what he said before. Before he said we do distinguish, now he's saying no. It's a little strange that Rabbi Yeshua is giving an answer to the question before Rabbi Gamliel. If you look at some of the Rishonim, they actually have a different girsa that has Rabbi Gamliel stating his opinion first. Although we do find conceptually such an idea that when it came to Psak Halacha, we start from the Katan and move to the Gadol. So maybe that's the same thing over here, that Rabbi Gamliel gave his opinion last because he didn't want to influence the other people there. And therefore Rabbi Yeshua gives his opinion first, and then Rabbi Gamliel expresses his opinion. Amar lei Rabban Gamliel, v'alo mishmecha amru li hein. I heard over in your name that you said, yes, there is a distinction. Why are you saying that there is no distinction over here? Yeshua, amod al raglecha. Rabbi Yeshua, stand up. He says, Yeshua, obviously, because he's the Nasi, you can speak to him, he's a peer of his. You can speak to him, Yeshua, amod al raglecha. Ve'idu b'cha, and they'll testify against you. Tosafot says the Idu B'cha should be dropped from the Girsa here, the Girsa and other Gemarot as well. It's pulled from the Gemara in Sanhedrin with the case of Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach and Yanai HaMelech. Rabbi Shimon Shetach brings Yanai HaMelech to court, and the discussion that they're having, he says to Yanai, stand up. You're not a king over here, you're a Baal Din over here. We're going to adjudicate you, and you have to stand up. But over here, there's no reason that you have to say, Idu B'cha. That they're going to testify against you. But Yanai HaMelech was a court case. And they were going to testify against him or speak about the matter. Over here, there's nobody to testify against him. Just Amod HaGalecha, stand up. Rabbi Gamliel wants to make a point that Rabbi Yeshua now was dissenting and changing his mind. The way to read it, if you don't have the Balei Tosafot, is V'idu B'cha, means the person who told us that information is here and he's going to corroborate the fact that you said otherwise. Amod Rabbi Yeshua Raglav V'amar. So Rabbi Yeshua gets up and answers. Hey, Chesed, what can I do? If I was alive and he was dead, seemingly speaking about Rabbi Tzadok, then I could have lied. I could have said whatever I wanted to say because there's no evidence to the contrary. Nobody can contradict me. Now that I'm alive and he's alive, meaning that Rabbi Tzadok is here, then how can I deny the fact that he's saying that I said otherwise? In essence, Rabbi Yeshua says, I might have not said the truth, but now I have to tell you that I'm not telling the truth because there's evidence, or the person that's here is going to declare that I said something else otherwise. It's a very difficult statement because Rabbi Yeshua is basically saying he would have lied. The only reason he's not lying is because he's compelled not to lie because the person who's going to testify against him is present. It's a little strange. Rashi therefore comes to the conclusion that Rabbi Yeshua really changed his mind. That he says, Chazanibi, I changed my mind. And he really changed his mind. Meaning that he gave that psak to Rabbi Tzadok originally, but at this point he had changed his mind and now he believes that Rabban Gamliel is correct. And now when Rabban Gamliel is pointing out that he had said something otherwise, he said, had there been no evidence to the contrary, I just would have said I never said it, because I think that this is the right halacha now, and therefore I'm passing this way. But now that you have the person that's going to contradict that, I did say something otherwise, but I've changed my mind at this point. The Baal Tosafot say that they don't think that's the explanation here. They don't think that Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind. They think that he's steadfast. The reason that he lied over here, or was willing to lie, was Adam Kavod for Rabbi Gamliel. He did not want to dissent against Rabbi Gamliel in the yeshiva. Now, it's very important that we're dealing with the generation after Churban HaBayit. These are a Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Gamliel is trying to basically create a single halachic authority in Klal Yisrael in Yavne. So what he tries to do is stop dissenting opinions or having these renegade or vigilante type of chachamim that are poskening against the system. So here he's trying to enforce that by bringing Rabbi Yeshua in. That's why he says to Rabbi Tzadok, wait, everybody will get here and get Rabbi Yeshua. So now when Rabbi Yeshua comes along and says that he agrees with them, Rabbi Gamliel is trying to force the issue to say, that you were dissenting before. And now you're telling me you don't dissent? He wants to make sure that everybody understands that Rabbi Gamaliel is being koveya halacha here, even though Rabbi Yeshua might dissent. He doesn't want Rabbi Yeshua walking out of here then, and out of respect for him, he said no here, but then go and paskin otherwise outside of the Beit Midrash. So Rabbi Gamaliel is trying to enforce that singular halachic authority. So according to Rashi, he changed his mind and he's agreeing. But Rabbi Gamaliel saying that maybe you're just doing it out of kavod, because I know that you said otherwise. The Baal Yetzos Avot say that he just did it out of respect, but he really didn't change his mind, because he says you can't say that Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind. The Yefshar Lamar came to Perek Tfilat HaShachar. The story here is paralleled with a story in Rosh Hashanah and a story in the Gemara in Brachot. The three incidents where Rabbi Yeshua gave a psak halacha, and Rabbi Gamaliel disagreed. In each of those cases, Rabbi Gamaliel forced Rabbi Yeshua to comply with his view, but he did it in a way that was somewhat denigrating towards Rabbi Yeshua. And in the end, that leads to the deposing of Rabbi Gamaliel and being replaced by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And that's the story throughout Shas of Oto Ayom, on that day, which is the Mishnayot and Ediyot, that day that they deposed Rabbi Gamaliel and appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It's because of these incidents with Rabbi Yeshua. This is one of those three incidents. The problem that Tosfot points out is that over here it might work well to say Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind, because we don't paskin like Rabbi Yeshua, we paskin like Rabbi Gamaliel. But in the Gemara in Brachot, where they're arguing about whether Tevilat Arvit is Rishut or Chovah, and Rabbi Yeshua is of the position that it's Rishut, we paskin that Tevilat Arvit is Rishut. To say that Rabbi Yeshua changed his mind doesn't make sense, because we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua over there. So he says you can't say over there it's Chuzraniba, and therefore over here it also doesn't necessarily make sense to say that. Even though Tosfot on Lamed Hamud Bet quotes that view of Rashi and says maybe you can get away with saying that Rabbi Yeshua really doesn't disagree over here because he changed his mind. So you're allowed to have dissenting opinions. What he can't have is that Rabbi Yeshua in front of him agrees, and then outside of the Beit Midrash gives an alternate psak, which is what happened. Outside the Beit Midrash, he gave a psak to Rabbi Tzadok that was in contradiction to Rabbi Gamaliel. You can have dissenting opinions, but once there's a psak, or once the Nasi has a psak, you have to abide by it. He's worried about Rabbi Yeshua going out now, after telling him that there is no distinction, going back and poskening like he did before, that there is such a distinction. That's what it says over here. V'alocha kein. The locha is like Rabbi Gamaliel over here. The ein chiluk ben chaver la'amaretz. The reason Tosfot brings the proof from is the fact that in other places, someone asked the question about Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel. Is the locha like Rabbi Meir if you're chashud on one thing, you're chashud the gamrei, and you can't testify? Or is the locha like Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel, where you're only not believed about your own stuff, you are believed about other people's stuff? There, the Gemara is speaking about an individual, it's a Talmud Chacham, who's asking the question. So if a Talmud Chacham is asking the question, that means he thinks it applies to him by Rabbi Meir's din. If he thinks it applies to him by Rabbi Meir, he also thinks that applies to him by Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel. If that's the case, we have the answer to our question. It applies to a Talmud Chacham as well. So Tosfot says that's evidence of the fact that Rabbi Gamaliel is right over here. So, Vayah Rabbi Gamaliel omeid v'doresh. Rabbi Gamaliel was standing and being doresh. It's brought by the Mishnayot and other places that after Rabbi Gamaliel, Kavod HaTorah went down because of Chalishat HaDorot. That in those days when you learned Torah, spoke Torah, you stood up and you taught. After that point, people didn't have the strength to do it, so we sit down when we learn and teach Torah. Rabbi Yeshua made a raglav, but he left Rabbi Yeshua standing. I mean, Rabbi Gamaliel continues with the shir, he doesn't give Rabbi Yeshua permission to sit down, and he's left there standing again, which was a clear indication of Rabbi Gamaliel's being upset with Rabbi Yeshua and, quote-unquote, mistreating him in this situation. So then you have basically a popular rebellion against Rabbi Gamaliel, where they think that he is not treating Rabbi Yeshua properly, and they start to murmur, they start to complain. They say to Chutzpita Madurgaman, who is the loudspeaker for Rabbi Gamaliel, he's the one when Rabbi Gamaliel told him he repeated the shir over, both whether it was needed to be translated or whether it was to make it louder. That was the way that they gave shirim over there. They said to Chutzpita Madurgaman, Amod, stop, Vamad, and he stopped. And the people refused to listen anymore to Rabbi Gamaliel because of his mistreatment of Rabbi Yeshua. So again, you have this popular rebellion against the way that Rabbi Gamaliel is treating Rabbi Yeshua. Tosfot points out that Chutzpita Madurgaman is mentioned in the Asara Aruge Malchut that we say on Tisha B'Av on Yom HaKippurim. But here is one of the three instances where Rabbi Gamaliel mistreats Rabbi Yeshua, and then cumulatively, once they get together, they say enough is enough, and that's when they depose Rabbi Gamaliel
for mistreating Rabbi Yeshua. And again, it might have been that Rabbi Yeshua was doing the same Shemayim, but they felt that he was going too far. Even though he's trying to do something positive and constructive, they felt that at the expense of Rabbi Yeshua, that wasn't necessary, or he didn't need to do this to Rabbi Yeshua. He could have made the point without mistreating Rabbi Yeshua. All right, next Mishnah. Neman HaKohen Lomar, Hareti B'chor Zeh U'bal Mumhu. Kohen is believed to say that I showed this B'chor to the Chacham or to the Mumche, and it is a Baal Mum. Now Rashi over here clarifies that he's believed about that, but he's not believed about the fact that he didn't put the mum there. So he's giving us two pieces of information. One is that he got it approved or certified that this is a real mum. This is a bechor and it's a real mum in it. But he doesn't have is evidence of the fact that he didn't put the mum in it. And Rashi says, therefore, he needs other edim. Uvajilo edim, shelo yitilu ba mum. We need other edim. We need other evidence of the fact that he didn't put the mum in there. That's the way Rashi learns it. But from the Rosh, it sounds like we believe him not only with regards to the fact that they showed it to a chacham, the chacham was matir it, but also the fact that he didn't put the mum into the animal. Because by the mere fact that the chacham approved it, and we believe him with regards to that, we assume the chacham looked into the matter. If he already looked into the matter, then we don't need to look into it anymore. So the question of the certification of the chacham, is the certification just simply, it is a mum? Or does the certification mean this is a mum, and a reliable mum, because we already checked out this situation? According to those that believe that it's a reliability factor as well, then you won't need other edim. Rashi clearly says you do need other edim because all he did was certify that it's a mum. We don't necessarily know that the kohen didn't put the mum in here. Amrei Amarav, Neman HaKohen Lomar, B'chor Zeh Natan LeYisrael B'Mumo. The kohen could say that the Israel gave me this B'chor, and there was a mum in it when the Israel gave it to me. My Daima, why does he believe there? Komilta Davida Ligluye Lo Mishakre Ba'inshe. Things that are going to become revealed, people don't lie about. Meaning that if you testify or tell us information about something that the veracity of which will become disclosed, then we believe you because there's no reason for you to lie. Or if you do lie, you're going to get caught in the lie. And so for that reason, we believe individuals when there's going to be disclosure of this information in the future or the information will become obvious. So over here too. If he says, I got it from the Yisrael with a mum in it, all you have to do is ask the Yisrael, was there a mum in it? So since we can verify that information, or that information can come to light, then he's not going to lie about it, because we have a way of checking the facts of what he is saying. So Amar Rashi, Afanan Namitanina. Our Mishnah says the same thing. Neman HaKohen Lomar Hareti B'chor Zeh U'Baal Mumu. He's believed to say that I showed it to the Chacham, and he said it was a mum. My time up. What's the reason the Kohen's bleed over here? La mishum damrina kol milta davidi leigluya lo mishakri beinche. Because anything that's going to be revealed or information that can be disclosed or checked for its veracity, people don't lie about. Since he said that I got it checked by the Chacham, all we have to do is go ask the Chacham. Did you check it? Were you matir the moment this bechor? So since we can go and find out the information, that's why he's believed in this case. So Rav Ashi says that the Mishnah backs up that which Rav Yehuda Merav said. Mar says, not necessarily. As we saw in the Reveinu Gershom, the reason that we believe him over there is because the Kohen's not suspect to eat Kodoshim Bachutz. Avahokha came into Chashide, Chashide. But maybe over here, where they lie about putting Mumim in, maybe once they're Chashud. Doesn't matter whether we can check the information. So if you say the reasoning in our Mishnah is because it's something that will become revealed, therefore the person doesn't lie, well, if you extrapolate that, then Rabbi Yehuda Merav's statement is correct. If he says that I got it from Yisrael the moment it, since we can verify the information, he's not going to lie about it. So that's true if you believe that's the reason in the Mishnah. But if the reason in the Mishnah is because the Kohen doesn't eat Kodeshim Bachutz, and therefore we believe him because he wouldn't eat it otherwise. The fact that he's eating it now shows that he really got that permission or that certification. Rabbeinu Gershom over here says that the situation is a case where shachatu. It's already shechted in front of us, and he's telling us, I showed it to the Chacham, and he approved, he certified the mum. And then the Kohen's about to eat it. He just said before that Kohanim are not chashud to eat Kodoshim Bachutz. Therefore, he should be believed over here. So he definitely showed it to him because of the fact that he's eating it, or he's willing to eat it over here. It means that he definitely got a psak. We're not questioning that with regards to this matter, because there's evidence of the fact that he's willing to eat it, that it must be true that what she is saying. Because Kohanim are not chashudim to eat kodoshim b'chutz. They might be chashud to put mumim into b'chorot, but they're not chashud
to eat. And obviously all this would only be true with Mumim, where you need Hachra, where the Kohen needs you to declare it or certify it. If it's so obvious that it's a Mum, then you don't have this idea that he won't eat Kodeshim Bachutz anymore, because he knows that it's a good Mum, or a good enough Mum to eat it, and therefore he loses a certain amount of Nemanut. So if that's the case, then we can't extrapolate from that to the case of, he says that the Yisrael put the Mum in it. Because whether Yisrael put the Mum in it, or whether he put the Mum in it, it's not Kodeshim Bachutz anymore. And he'd be willing to maybe lie or be chashud about that, because in the end he's not eating Kodeshim Bachutz, and so he doesn't worry about it. So maybe he couldn't extrapolate it. Because over here he's suspect, then he's suspect. Meitiv Rav Shizbi. Ha'omer l'mish ein ne'aman ala maser. Person who says to someone who's not trustworthy with regards to masrot, he's an amaretz, he doesn't take off trumot to masrot. Kach le'mimishu ne'aman. Go and buy produce from someone who is believed with regards to maser, meaning that they don't give their trumot to masrot to amei haaretz, they're careful about taking off trumot to masrot. O m'mishu maser. Or from someone who takes off masrot. And even if he buys from an aretz, he's mafrish, masrot, demai. Einu ne'aman. The person is not believed. So if you create a shliach or a proxy to go buy the produce from you, a person that he himself is not trustworthy with regards to these matters, but you tell him or specify for him to go buy it from someone who is trustworthy with regards to these matters, he is not believed. Amai. Name a kol milta David de glule lo mishakrei ba'inche. Why don't you invoke the principle that you said over here, which is, things that can be verified, people don't lie about. Over here, you can verify whether he bought it from someone who was Neman or not, so maybe he wouldn't lie. Shani Otam, over there, the case by Maser is different. Deitle leishtimute. He has a way to slip out of it. He has a way to, quote-unquote, lie about the situation. Because he says, either you could say, I thought I remembered it was this guy, I thought it was this guy that I bought it from, but really it was someone else when you go and check on it. Or, he can say, when you go and check and you find the individual, and you find that the individual you bought from is not trustworthy, he can say, well, he's not trustworthy to you, he is trustworthy to me. Neman is in the eyes of the beholder, and I thought he was a trustworthy individual. So since he can get himself out of being caught in a lie, then he will lie, because he doesn't think he'll get caught. So Gemara says, okay, that's not a proof to this, but seifa vadai mesayelik. The latter half of that Mishnah in Demai is definitely supportive of this idea that if we can verify the information, the person won't lie, because it says, Me'ish Ploni, if he specifies who he has to buy it from, Harizeh Neman, then the person is believed. So if he tells someone who's not trustworthy with regards to Masrot, go buy it from so-and-so, and then the individual has to bring it back to him, and then he says, yes, I bought it from so-and-so, he's believed because we can check. You can go ask so-and-so, did the guy come and buy it from you, and you can verify the information. So you see there that because it's ate l'gluye, since it's going to be revealed or you can verify the information, he won't lie about it because he'll get caught in the lie. Gemara says, maybe not. Hotam came in the toveya mirtat. Over there, because he has a claimant, he is fearful. Here, the individual specified a particular person he wants it to buy from. He knows by the fact that you specify that person, that you're makpid on this. And it's meaningful to you. So he's afraid to lie, or afraid not to do the right thing, because he knows that you're makpid, and that you're probably going to check up on this information, because it's something that is meaningful to you, and you're disclosing it up front. On the other hand, by the case of the Bechor, who says that the person is fearful? All he said was a chacham checked it, and now it's mutar. First of all, he didn't specify which chacham he went to. And number two is, it's a disclosure of information in a generic sense. Cat, it's not in a case where the person instructed you to go to this person and buy it from that particular individual, whereby it's very easy to check, and the guy's likely to check because it's meaningful to him. In the case here where he's volunteering the information to us and saying, oh, I took it to a chacham and he approved of it, or I got it from Yisrael and the mum was already there, the person he's saying that to now would have to take an active engagement and now go chase down that information. Is he likely to do that? Not really. He probably just trusts the guy, or he's going to say it's okay. There's no incentive necessarily to chase down the information, and therefore maybe we wouldn't believe him in that case. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Baba, Menale Liyudaha. First of all, that statement of Rabbi Yehuda Marav, where did he get it from? Ana Begidul Kavate, And now Rashi brings two possible explanations. Either Gidul Kavate, I taught it to the Talmud Chacham called Gidul, or I taught it to a Talmud Chacham, Gidol from the word Gadol. I taught it to some Talmud Chacham, the Gidol Kava B'Didei. And Gidol, whether it's the name of the Chacham or that great Talmud Chacham, taught it to Rabbi Yehuda. So I know the source of Rabbi Yehuda's information, and he's misquoting it. And this is what I taught. Neman Yisrael Lomar, because then I taught the Kohen B'Mumo. It's not that the Kohen is believed to say that he got this animal from the Yisrael with the Mum in it. What is trustworthy over here is the Yisrael can say, I gave this animal to the Kohen with a Mum in it. Mar says, Yisrael, Pshita. Why would you need me to tell you that? Only Kohanim are Chashudim are putting Mumim. Yisraelim are not Chashudim to put Mumim in. Mar says, look, sorry. It's a case, Bikatan, big deal. It was small and then grew up. Maudetema, what I have thought, Lokim Leibadei, he doesn't recognize it anymore. Kamash Malon, that we don't say that. So Rashi over here brings that the Katan big deal is the animal. When the Yisrael gave the animal to the Kohen, it was very small, it was very young. Now the animal is much older and much bigger. So maybe we would say that the Yisrael doesn't know the animal so well that he can tell us now that this animal today is the same animal that he gave to the Kohen before. Kamash Malon is, we do. We say that he does have that evidence, or he does have that capacity to be discerning and tell us that information. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, says, it's Bekatan is the Yisrael that gave it to the Kohen. It was given to the Kohen when he was a minor, when he was a Katan. And then he grew up. So do we say that what he remembers from when he was a minor is allowed to be used now and is declaring that this is the same animal that he gave to the Kohen? Because he's basically remembering back to his childhood. Is that a sufficiently strong enough memory that we rely on it? So the Rabbeinu Gershom brings that, and then he brings Rashi's explanation as well. So whether it's the animal was young and small and now is grown up, or whether it's the individual was young and then grew up, in either case, you might have had a Havamina to suggest that he would not be believed with regards to these matters. Kamash Malan, that he is believed with regards to these matters. But then the statement was made, it was Neman Yisrael. Only Yisrael was believed, not a Kohen was believed about this. The Surah Matnu Kalishna Batra, and Surah they brought like the latter Lashon, meaning that it was a Yisrael that is Neman to say that I gave it to the Kohen B'Mumo. But Pumbadita Kalishna Kama. And the Pumbadita, they had it like the original language that Rabbi Yehuda Merav said, which was that a Kohen who says, I got it from Yisrael with a Mum in it, that he is Neman. The Ilkata, and the Locha is Akilu Kalishna Kama. The Locha is like the Lishna Kama, that even a Kohen is believed to say that he got it from Yisrael with a Mum in it. And that's based on the concept that things that can be verified or information that will be disclosed in the future, people don't lie about, because they know they'll get caught in their lie, or they'll be afraid that they will get caught in their lie, and therefore they won't lie about that type of information. Rafrafam b'pumpadita havale buchra. Rafram who lived in Pumpadita had a buchor. Havale the Kohen below Muma. He brought it to the Kohen and did not have a Mum in it. When he gave it to the Kohen, it did not have a Mum in it. Azo shadeve Muma. The Kohen, like we suspect, went ahead and made a Mum in it. Yomachad chalesh be'ene. One day, Rafram had difficulty with his eyesight. Whether that means one day it was just some passing issue, or Yom Achad means that he reached an age or an advanced age where his eyes were no longer functioning so well and he couldn't see so well. Ayti the Kameh, the Kohen takes advantage of that and brings him the animal that day. Amalai b'chor zeh natan l'Yisrael b'mumo. And now the animal has a Mum in it, and he says to Raphram, I got this animal from the Yisrael with a Mum in it. He's obviously lying because he's the one who put the Mum in it. But he's making that claim. Arpisine le'ene. So Raphram pressed himself, or with great effort and force, opened up his eyes to see what was there. Chazia. Now, the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Baal Yitosfot read it is, Chazia Bashkere. He recognized what was going on over here. Rashi translates it as not Chazia Bashkere, but Chazia Bishikre. He caught his lie. So either way, it's the same outcome, but it's a question of whether the language is a language of Hakara, of understanding and recognizing, which is Bashkere, or is it a lashon of Bishikre in his lie. And that is because Lavana de Avite Lecha, aren't I the one who gave you this animal? So you see here, the Kohen is willing to lie, even though he could be found out. Because here, Raphram is the one who gave him the animal. And he brings it to Raphram and says, oh, this came from Yisrael, and at a moment it. Raphram was the one who gave it to him. And Raphram catches him in that lie. Because Raphram forced himself to look at it, he recognized the animal, and he knew it was the animal that he had given. And the animal that he had given did not have a moment it. So he knew the Kohen was lying. So that should now undermine Rabbi Yehuda Merav's statement that a Kohen doesn't lie when it comes to information that can't be verified. Here we see he does. So Mar says, "Afilu achi lo chashla the milta." Even though we find now that the Kohen is willing to lie, even when he's going to be found out, even when the information is verifiable, nevertheless, Raphram was not worried about it. Hayu dechutzit. This guy was a super mechutzav. He was extremely insolent. Kuliyama lo chatzife. Other people are not so insolent or disregarding. This individual was a piece of work. Because if he really wanted to cheat and do this, he should have taken to another chacham. Just taken to another chacham, and the other chacham would have no way of knowing that this animal came from Raphram or came from Yisrael, who didn't put the mum in it. And so that would have been the best way to deal with it. Instead, this guy goes to Raphram, who gave him the animal. He's so brazen, he's so insolent, that he went straight to the person that had given it to him, and he gets caught in his lie. Yeah, you're right. The reason that he went to Raphram that day was because he couldn't see, or he was having difficulty seeing, so he wanted to take advantage of it. But still, if you had to make a choice about taking it to him or taking it to someone else, it would have made more sense to take it to someone else. Raphram basically says, this guy is an outlier. He's not in your normal distribution. This guy's sitting on the way tail end of people who are crazy, that they are willing to take such a risk and don't worry about being caught and go and lie to the person who actually gave it to them. That guy is off the reservation. Normal people would not do that. If they're going to lie, they're going to go to someone else, first of all. And if they go to someone else, they're going to tell the truth because they know that they're going to be found out if they don't tell the truth. Hausarua, this animal that had different sized limbs, over here Rashi mentions one eye was bigger than another eye. Datu lekameh deravashi, amar lemay nechushle. So Kohen brought the animal to be investigated by Ravashi, who was checking out the mum as to whether it was a valid mum. And he says, what should we worry about? E Kohen who, Israel who. It doesn't matter if this guy who's bringing it to us is a Kohen Israel, he doesn't know who he is. We should believe him. Hari Bechor umumo imo. You have the Bechor here, and it has a congenital mum. This is not a mum that an individual could create in the animal. It's something that the animal was born with. There's nothing to be chosesh for, and therefore they should be believed in this case, or we should be able to be matirid in this case. Amalei Ravina the Ravashi, but Dilma Yisrael who? Maybe it's a problem because he is Yisrael. Okay, if it's a Kohen, you're right. You should be matirid because Mimon of Shach, it's okay. Because if it's a congenital problem, and therefore it's for sure the Kohen didn't put it in there, if it's a good mom, then you should be matirid for him. But for Yisrael, we have another principle you would violate if you were matirid for him. Because Amar Rav Yehuda, we do not go ahead and check the animal of Israel to tell us whether it is a mum that's sufficient to check the Bechoran unless there's a Kohen with him. That is because we are suspicious of the Israel's motives over here. Israel, like the Kohen, is not going to eat Kodoshim Bachutz because there is a Chiyuv Karet. So he wants to make sure there's a mum in there to get rid of the problem of Karet. Now, that has to do with the issue of Kodoshim Bachutz, correct. As far as stealing, he has no compunctions about stealing, and therefore he would take it from the Kohen, even though it's not him. So we make a Kohen come with him, so the Kohen knows that that Bechor is not the Yisrael's Bechor, it has a mum in it, and that the Kohen's entitled to it and not the Yisrael. So maybe that should be a problem over here for Rav Ashi to give up Psak without knowing whether the individual is a Kohen or Yisrael. You can't compare the cases. Over there, the problem is that by Kodoshim Bachutz, he doesn't violate it. Rashi again says because it's an Isur Karet. But with stealing, he would steal the money of the Kohen. That's only a lav. So Rashi talks about it in terms of severity. That the Kodoshim Bachutz is much more severe because it's Karet. There, he's not going to lie about that. That's why he wants to bring it to the Chacham to find out that as a mum in it. In terms of declaring that it's his, or not giving it to the Kohen afterwards, that's theft. And that's only a lav, and therefore he wouldn't mind violating a lav. I think you could have said that without even getting to the severity of the punishment. We've seen many times in Shas, there's ample evidence of the fact that people many times are more makbid on mitzvot ben adam le makom than they are ben adam le chaviro. When it comes to kodashim, when it comes to the mikdash, when it comes to items that belong to God, we don't mess around with that. Ben adam le makom, that is something that we are 100% about. Ben Adam the Chaveiro, what's the big deal?
why does it matter so much? It's not God. It's just another guy. If I steal from him, what's the big deal? People treat Ben Adam the Chaveiro very differently than Ben Adam the Makom. They're Chared al Dvar Hashem. When it comes to things that are with Hashem, when it comes to Chaveiro, there they are matir everything, or they justify anything that they do. So this individual over there, why we need a Kohen to accompany him is because there's high suspicion that he would steal. Haka michta yoda the high mom muvaku. Over here, the mom is obvious. It's one eye bigger than the other eye. This Israel wouldn't have to bring it to us to ask us if it's a mom. He would have known it's a mom even without us. My time at you, haka meidur abonan. So then why did he bring it to get it checked by the rabbis? Mishum kvodo the chacham. To give deference to the chacham. So even though the Israel himself would have known it was a mom, it's an obvious mom, it's a congenital mom, and he wouldn't need to come to the chacham, he still came to the chacham anyway. Kvodo the chacham. Lo avar. Itzura avar. He's not willing to violate the kavod, the honor of this individual, and therefore, he gives deference to him and brings him something that he knows the answer to the chacham, to check that it's a mom and a bechor. So if he's willing to give deference to a chacham, he's certainly not going to violate Isurim and start stealing this. So that's why Rabbi Ashi said in the end, Mimorav Shach, we can be matirit. It's a congenital mom, which means the Kohen definitely didn't put it in, because it's something that the animal was born with. The Yisrael, where it doesn't belong to him, he needs to give it to the Kohen, you still will give a psak halacha to him that it is mutar yidei this mom, because, again, he didn't need to bring it to the chacham in order to verify that or to get that psak. It was obvious. And so therefore, the fact that he's willing to bring it and give deference to the chachamim, this is a person that cares about these issues. He's not going to steal from the Kohen. We don't have to worry about it. So even though we don't know whether the party is a Kohen or Yisrael, Rav Ashi is willing to say right away with the Saruah that it's a Bechor Baal Mum, and you can check based on that Mum. Right, next Mishnah. Hakol Ne'emanim Al Mumei Maser. Something we discussed in yesterday's daf. Everyone is believed to tell us that there's a Mum in the Maser Be'ema. That's whether it's Yisrael, whether it's a Kohen, whoever is the Baalim. We believe them when they tell us that there is a mum here. I didn't put the mum in it. It happened by itself. Rashi, interesting enough, explains the Mishnah as a case, ubisafek maser kamar. It's a case where there's a safek as to whether this is maser beima or not. It's a very strange thing. Even if it is vada maser beima, if we're not poshed the people to put mumim in it, why can't he believe with regards to that matter? So many believe that the Mishnah is speaking about bismanazeh, but there's no chance for the animal to end up on the Mizbeach. There could be a chashad that people would put a mum in it in order to be able to eat it. And we say that they're believed, and they don't do that because of what the Gemara is going to explain. Rashi, on the other hand, might be speaking Mizman Abayit. But Mizman Abayit, the Meiser goes up onto the Mizbeach. If that's the case, we're not chashad that people are going to put a mum into something that is Ra'ui L'Hakravah L'Mizbeach. And so Rashi therefore has to make the case where there's no chance the animal's going to end up on the Mizbeach. That's a case of Safek Maser. In that case, then it won't end up on the Mizbeach anymore. And for that reason, people are more, maybe more willing to put a mum in it. And that's what the Mishnah is telling you, Ne'aman, that they're believed with regards to that matter. So Rashi might be stating a case of Safek Maser, because he believes the Mishnah is even addressing a case of Bizman Abayit. And the only way to have it by Bizman Abayit, where it's not obvious that the person wouldn't put a mum in it because they wouldn't do that to Kodashim, in a case where it won't end up in the Mizbeach. So either it's that case of Safek Maser Bizman Abayit, or it's a case of Bizman Azeh, where it's not going to end up on the Mizbeach as well. And so in those cases, you might have had a chashash that people would put mumim. The Mishnah comes along and tells you, Ne'emanim, they're believed. My daimon. Why do we believe him over here? Why by Bechor do we not believe the Kohen? By Maser, we do believe the Kohen or the Yisrael. He could have put a mum in it from the outset. The animal is not kadosh before it becomes maiser behema. So therefore, there's no restriction against putting a mum in it. So if he wanted to deal with the problem, he could have put the mum in beforehand, and it wouldn't have been a sur, and he would have gotten the same result. So Rashi says, mi yoda hei nafi. How do you know which one is coming out number 10? If you say that he makes sure that this is the 10th one, the pasuk says, "Go yivakir ben tov l'ra." My Rachmana, the Torah says, you're not allowed to be discerning when it comes to doing the mitzvah maser. You just let them walk out, and whichever one is the 10th one is the 10th one. You don't pick which one is the 10th one. And even though this person's trying to force the issue, but we don't believe that he's not going to comply with the normal rules of maser beima. So even though he wants to put a mum in it, again, which is not illegal, the rest of what he does he's going to do properly, and therefore he's going to do the maser beima like it's supposed to be done, which is to let them go out by themselves and not direct them out. So how is this individual going to preemptively make sure that the Meiser is not a problem for him? The reason that we believe him is because if he really wants to take care of the problem and not have to wait for a mum, the easiest thing to do would be to put a mum in the entire eder. Go and put a mum in each of the animals before you take off the Meiser Beima. Again, it's mutar to do such because they are chulin at that point in time. Only once they become kadosh Meiser Beima is an easier, but they mumim in them. And so, over here, he'll do it all before. Do all the animals. That way, whichever one comes out 10th is already covered. And that way, he could be mafki himself from the necessity to wait for a mum to happen. The fact that now he tells us that there's a mum in the animal now, he's believed, because if he wanted to deal with the issue, he could have dealt with it in a much different way, in an easier way for himself. He was going to lie. So that's why he's Naaman. Bechor shnismeteino. A bechor whose eye was punctured. Shnikta yado. Its foreleg was cut off. Shnishbaragolo, its fine leg broke. You can get approval from three people of the Knesset to approve this and certify that it is a mum. Rabbi Yossi Omer, if there are 23 people there, you need an expert to check it out. You need someone who is qualified. Now, mumche generally means someone who's an expert, qualified, and certified. That means that they were given permission to give sakalocha, like we have by Yoreh, or Yadin, like the Gemara in the beginning of Sanhedrin, that was speaking about those approvals, and one of them is Matir Bechorot. Is he allowed to be Matir Bechorot? Matir, that would be a mumche. That's generally what the Gemara means by a mumche. That seemingly is what Rabbi Yossi requires over here. And so some Rishonim believe based on that, that you need a mumche, you need an expert to check the Bechorim. On the other hand, the Bali Tosafot over here say that the mumche that's being used over here is not the same mumche that we find in other places in Shas. Tosafot says, Lav davka mumche shimcho beitin. It's not somebody who's necessarily certified or tested by beitin. Dal Ravashi le'el amrinan. We just saw the story with Ravashi that they brought a bechor to Ravashi to check out. And Ravashi is not a mumche. He was never, first of all, he's not an Eretz Yisrael. And second of all, he's not classified as a mumche. So you see from there that you don't need a mumche. But rather you need, as Tosafot says, call a muflag b'chokhma u'mumche ra'ui latir b'chor. Anybody who is a unique, special Talmud Chacham and is an expert in these matters, he can give psak, even though he never got certification or never was given granted permission to be matir b'chorot. But then Tosafot says, the psak halacha is, miyu b'zan hazeh, eini resh shum adam chashiv mumche latir. So Tosafot says, in our day, I don't think we have anybody who is considered a mumche to be Matir Bechor v'neder v'yichidei alom ladum dinei memanot. So Tosafot basically says, that type of mumche doesn't exist anymore. So even if you lower the standard of mumche, Tosafot says, still at that lower standard, we still don't have people that meet that lower threshold. Rabbi Shimlai, Rabbi Yehuda, Nisia, Tarvayu Mishmei, the Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, they both said over in the name of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Amri Lo, some say that it was Rabbi Shimlai, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Tarvayu Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. I'm right. They, both of them were saying it over the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. Hatarat Bechor Bechutz L'aretz. When you want to be Matir Bechor outside of Eretz Yisrael, Al Pi Shlosha B'nei HaKnesset. You can use three regular people. I'm going to come back and explain what B'nei HaKnesset are later on at the end of the Gemara today. But you can use three people. Amaroba Obe Mumim Uvakim. That's only true if the Mumim are obvious. It doesn't require any Akhra'ah. It just requires someone to look at it and say it's a mum because it's so obvious that it is a mum. My kamash malon, what are you teaching us? So now we're saying that in chutz la'aretz, you can have three people do this and they can certify as long as it's a clear mum. Atanina, our Mishnah says, Bechor shnismeteinu, shnikta yado, shnishbera raglo. A bechor whose eye was poked out, its foreleg was cut off, or its back leg was broken. Arizei shachet api gimel b'nei Knesset. That's what the Mishnah says. That you can check it based on three people. Gemara says, even at Nitin, if we had that information from the Mishnah, I mean, of a chutzlaretz. In chutzlaretz, afilu mumim, she'ena muvhakim. Even if they were mumim, they're not obvious. By the tani muvhakim, so then why is it mentioned obvious mumim in the Mishnah? Lodiyacha koach to Rabbi Yossi. To tell you the power of Rabbi Yossi, who says that you still need a mumchet to be involved. Kamash Malan, that's not the case. And the real reason in the Mishnah that it gives mumim a muvhakim is, because those are the only mumim you're allowed to be matir in chutz la'aretz with the Bnei HaKnesset without a mumche. So the Mishnah is only speaking about a case, b'zman hazeh. It does what it says, just because you know about zman hazeh, it doesn't necessarily mean that you would extrapolate to chutz la'aretz. Because bizman abayit, where there's a problem in Eretz Yisrael, you might have thought in Chutz La'aretz, somebody goes there out to Eretz Yisrael. You need a separate statement to say that Chutz La'aretz is the same as bizman hazeh. And the common denominator between them is that this bechor is not ending up on the mizbeach. And because of that, we allow three hedjotot to replace the mumche. But bizman abayit, Eretz Yisrael, where there's a possibility of a krav on the mizbeach, because of hefset mizbeach, cheating the mizbeach out of the akrava, there you would only be allowed to use a mumche in order to determine whether there's a mum in this animal. And so, based on that, you can see the Rabbeinu Gershom says that umatnitan, our mishnah is a case of chutz la'aretz, or bizman hazeh askinen, and today. Those are two big factors. First of all, in chutz la'aretz, in general, they did not bring up the Bekorim and the Maser Bema to the Mikdash because of problems of Takala and all other issues that come about. And therefore, in Chutz La'aretz, they waited for it to get a mum and then ate it. And Bizman HaZeh, where there are no Korbanot, both of those are contributing factors to why we say that they can be Matirit over here without any problem is because of the fact that the alternative doesn't exist. The alternative to put it on the Mizbeach is not an option that's available. Since that option is not available, it's either a mum or a mum. That's the only way to get out of the problem. That's why we allow to have three individuals certify the fact that this is a mum, as long as it's an obvious mum. We're not sure if it came from Rav or it came from Shmuel. Gimel matirim et ha-bechor b'makom shein mumche. Three lay people are allowed to be matir or certified the bechor as a mum where there is no mumche. My kamash malon. Again, what are you teaching us? Tanina, it's our mishnah. Or say, Yishachet al-Pim Gimel B'nei Knesset. You can be matur the Bechor by three people of the B'nei Knesset. Imi matnitin ha-vamina b'makom mumche. It comes from our Mishnah. I would have thought that even three people can do this when there's a mumche around. Get a choice. Either you go to the mumche, you go to three people, but you can do either or. Kamash malon b'makom she'en mumche in b'makom she'en mumche lo. What we're saying now is only when there's no mumche are you allowed to use the three hedjotot. But if there's a mumche available, you can't use three hedjotot. You have to go to the mumche. Three people can certify that the Bechor has a mum in it in a place where there is no mumche. Three people can do Hatarat Nedarim b'makom she'en hacham, where there's no Talmud Chacham to do the Hatarat Nedarim. So there seems to be a parallel between these two items by which three lay people are allowed to fill in for what otherwise would be the primary or proper way to do this. By Bechor it's a mumche, by Nidarim it is a Talmud Chacham. Now the Gemara says, Gimel matirim et Bechor b'makom she'en mumche. The fact that three individuals can be matir the Bechor when there is no mumche, tafuke mid Rabbi Yossi. That comes to Paskin against Rabbi Yossi's position of our Mishnah, where he says you always need a mumche in order to be matir the Bechor. Shlosha mefirin, if that's the gersa that we have, or matirim like we saw before. Tosafot notes that throughout Shas, the Gemara conflates the two items, even though they have very specific meanings and the terminology is different. A chacham is matir in neder, which means that he's oker the neder of the mafreya, retroactively undermines as if the neder never existed. The other hand, a father or a husband is mefer nidarim. They nullify prospectively the nidarim of the daughter or wife, respectively. When you use hafara, that's a reference to the father or the husband. You use hatara, that's a reference to the chacham. So Tosafot points out, here the Gemara says, mafirim et neder, b'makom she'en chacham. Three people are considered to be matir neder in a place where there is no chacham. Yet the Gemara uses the term mefer. And so Tosafot says that Chazal many places conflate the terms, and they say mefer when they mean matir, and they say matir when they mean mefer. Da'afuke mid Rabbi Yehuda. To teach us that the loch is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we have a bright da'afarat nidarim b'gimel. Hatarat nidarim requires three people. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, echad mehem chacham. One of them has to be a chacham. So over here we're saying that's not the case. You could have three hedjodot, three lay people do this, even without a chacham at all. And that's against Rabbi Yehuda's position, or is a psak against Rabbi Yehuda's position. Now the Gemara continues. There's some issue with the girsaot over here. You can see the Baalei HaTosafot discussing it, which they think, what girsa they think Rashi had, and what girsa was in the Gemara. The question really revolves around what is the Gemara trying to define over here. The way we have an argument says makom she'en chacham. In a place where there is no chacham, then you can have shloshed yodot. Kagon man. Who does it mean that there is no chacham? I'm Rav Nachman kagon ano. Like myself. So the Gemara's question according to Rashi is makom she'en chacham. in a place where there is no chacham, what type of chacham are we speaking about? It was a type of chacham that can be matir by themselves. That is Rav Nachman. If you don't have a Rav Nachman, then you can have three lay people do it. That's one way to read it. And that view is also somewhat supported by the fact that by the Hatarat Nidarim we said chacham, and by the Bechor we said mumcheh. So that already implies that the chacham that is by the Hatarat Nidarim is different or differentiated from the mumcheh by the Bechor. And in that way, it could be that we're speaking about Rav Nachman, who's a Talmud Chacham, but not a Mumcheh, and that's who can be Matir Nedar Yechidi. The other way to read it is the statement of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Echad Mehem Chacham, what type of Chacham are you speaking about when you need one of the three to be a Chacham? Then the answer would be, Rav Nachman saying, like myself, you need a Chacham of that level. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Mehem Chacham, we call the Hana Kodu, from Rabbi Yehuda's statement that one of them has to be a Chacham, makes it sound like the other two can be anyone, which seems to mean that you could have Amei Aretz. And what are the Amei Aretz doing? If you already have a Chacham, and then you're adding two Amei Aretz, what do the two Amei Aretz help you with if they aren't going to really be helpful in the din? These aren't people that are well-educated. These aren't people that can necessarily deal with the situation. So what is adding them to the Beit Din do if you already have a Chacham? So the answer to this is, Amar Ravina, the Mistabri Lo, the Savar. They have to be people that are intelligent. People who, according to the Rashi, you can teach them the halachot of nidarim, and they will understand it, and then be able to extrapolate or understand the psak halacha over here. For those intelligent people, they can meet the other two judges, because then they'd be supportive or helpful in the adjudication. If they are me'aretz, they're not necessarily helpful. Now Rashi says, the question over here was, if you need a chacham, sounds like the other two individuals could be nobodies. They can be me'aretz. And the Gemara's answer that it's not case, you need people who are sabre. Tosfot sees the question slightly differently, and he says, it's clear to the Gemara that the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda is not the Chacham that we mentioned earlier, which is the Mumcheh. Because even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that a Yochid Mumcheh can be Matir Bechorot. The only question is, when you're using Shlosh HaDiotot, do you need to have a Chacham be a part of them? And Rabbi Yehuda says yes. If he's already a Chacham that's a Mumcheh or a Talmud Chacham, then you wouldn't need the other two parties at all. The fact that we require the other two parties already shows you that that's a downgraded chacham. He's a lower level than the mumcheh that could have been matir by himself. So therefore, Tosfot sees this as being a question not about Amei Aretz, but a question as to what level. If you're telling me you need a chacham that's not the level of a mumcheh, then the other parties, what level are you looking for? I understand if you don't need a mumcheh, you can have a chacham. But if you don't have a chacham, what's the next level down? And the answer to that question is the mistabri le besabar. So according to Rashi, it's more like a rhetorical question, which is, Koldu, Yanning Amei Aretz, why would you Yan Amei Aretz to the court? The answer is, they're not Amei Aretz, they're a higher level. According to Tosfot, there's no Havamina that they're Amei Aretz. The question is, what is that next level down? You have Mumcheh, who could do it by himself. You have Chacham, who's necessary, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to be a part of those three. And then you have the other two. What's the level of the other two? It's just a straightforward question. The Gemara answers that they have to be Mistabri Lei B'Savar, that they have to be intelligent people who can understand and can extrapolate the information that is taught to them by the Chacham. Okay, now that we have this conclusion about what type of people are in the Beit Din, now we have to go back and say, what does it mean that you need three Beit HaKnesset? So the truth is that the Beit HaKnesset could just mean three lay people. And the lay people, the Gemara in the end says, have to be lay people that are intelligent. But that's all you need. You go to the shul, you pick three people, and that's what it means, Beit HaKnesset. Others suggest that Beit HaKnesset are the Asara Batmanim, the 10 individuals that are paid to keep the shul open, be there for minyanim, learn all day. Those are the type of people that we're speaking about. And that would be somebody of a little bit of a higher stature. Not only that they're intelligent, but there are people who are dedicated their lives to learning or the performance of mitzvot. And still others suggest that the Beit HaKnesset means somebody of stature. Doesn't mean going in lay people. It means people who are considered to be of importance within the Beit HaKnesset. People like Chaverim, that ate their Hulin B'Tahara. It's not clear here what the Beit HaKnesset means in this situation, or what type of standing or status is conferred upon them, or does it just simply mean anybody, lay people, anybody who shows up in the Beit HaKnesset? So depending on how you explain that, will also determine what level of individual you would require. So those are different ways to view what it means that the three people that here are the Bnei HaKnesset. Even if there are 23 people there, LMK, you have a mumcheh. Amar Rav Chanana, Amar Rav, in halacha ke Rav Yossi. The halacha is not like Rav Yossi. Pshita. What's the question? Yachid v'rabim, halacha ke Rabim. Rav Yossi is a dat yachid versus the Rabim. Of course the halacha should be like the Rabim. Mal d'teima nimoko imo. We have a general statement about Rav Yossi's view that nimoko imo. Rashi says that tamo. He explains his position very well, and he can bring evidence or proof to his positions. I mean, Rabbi Yossi's positions are usually very well thought out, well presented, to the point where it's convincing that the halacha should be like him, and therefore we paskin like him in most instances. So over here you might think the same thing, that the halacha should be like Rabbi Yossi over here. Kamash Malan, that's not the case. So from this statement of Rabbi Chananel and Marab, that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, Tifshot Meha, then you should be able to infer the Hakamaita Mishmeh Shmuel Itmar, that the first statement was made in the name of Shmuel, which is that before we said we weren't sure when Rav Yehuda Amar Yirmiyahu Abba said either in the name of Rav or in the name of Shmuel, Gimel Matirim Et Bechor Mekom Shein Mumche. Three lay people are allowed to be Matir Bechor when there is no Mumche. That statement also means in Halacha Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi requires a Mumche. So that statement means in halacha Rabbi Yossi, and now you have another statement in halacha Rabbi Yossi. Over here, it's clear that Rav said that. So if this is Rav's statement, then why do you need the other statement of Rav? That must have been Shmuel's statement, and that's what the Gemara says. The fact that Rav is speaking over here, then we should conclude that the original statement was in the name of Shmuel, Itmar, Timish made Rav, Tarte Lamali. Because if it was in the name of Rav, why does Rav have to tell you twice the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi? The Gemara says, no, Chada Michal Chaberte Itmar. It's not two separate piskei halacha. Rav said the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Once Rav said the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, then we know that Rav also believes you can use three lay people in order to have the Bechor be Nitar or for Hatarat Nidarim. And so therefore it's not necessarily a proof that the other statement was made by Shmuel. It could be an inference from this statement that the Rav said the other statement. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.